So, if we see the social condition of our society at the present time, it's not very good. As you said, we're not able to retain our youth, or even if they're retained to some extent, it's on their terms and conditions, not on Prabhupada's terms and conditions. And due to the influence of the broader society, they've adopted many of the values of the broader society, mixing freely in youth, watching TV, which is any serious devotee. What are they watching TV? What is that? It's Prabhupada writes in the purport to which verse is that? Is that Vedanti Tattva Vilas around there? That the Tachadadhana Muni, one of these verses, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that those who are seeking the absolute truth, they're so much overwhelmed by that they don't have time for anything else, they don't have inclination toward anything else, because they're so much wrapped in thought that I got this human life and now I have to utilize it to attain the purpose of life, that they can't even think of wasting their time with anything but that which is anukulyasya sankalpa, that which is favorable for serving Krishna. So yeah, then we lower the standards, and then we lose taste, and then others, and then we're not able to preach Krishna consciousness because we ourselves don't have a taste. We're not attractive to others. They don't see anything in us that they would like to be like us, and therefore, because we don't have the taste for Krishna consciousness, we don't have faith in presenting the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the basic practices, which in themselves are very powerful. Our basic preaching is Harinam, speak on Bhagavad Gita as it is, and then give prasadam, deity worship, all these basic festivals. All these basic processes are very powerful for bringing people to Krishna consciousness if they're executed by devotees who have faith in it and follow the principles. But if we don't ourselves follow the principles and we just come out at Rath Yatra, or we just come out at some festival, then we won't have the potency to bring others to Krishna consciousness, nor even the desire to, because if we ourselves are not following, and therefore we think we have to resort to so many different other processes, when Krishna consciousness in itself is the most attractive. So, this accommodation of Maya is very dangerous. As soon as we think that, all right, we'll lower the standard a little bit, but as soon as we give Maya a chance, she'll enter in. Now we may say, yeah, for preaching we have to accommodate and change things a little bit. But as far as possible, we should stick to the original standard, because that has potency, that has spiritual potency. Accommodating to the modern age, we may say, well, times are different. It's true that times are different, but things were better in the past, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. Tatas chanu dinam dharma. In the Kali Yoga, every day dharma, as well as satyam, shocham, shamadaya, as well as cleanliness, truthfulness, tolerance, mercy, every day, kalena balina rajan, by the powerful influence of time, nangshan. They reduce, as well as lifespan and memory and strength. Nangshant ayur balam smritihi. So we may say, well, society is different now, so we should adjust to modern society. But modern society is less; it's further away from dharma. With the passing of every day, the quality of life goes down. I'm not talking about how many roads we have, how many dollars we're earning, but dharma and everything else, it decreases. So Srila Prabhupada's aim was to bring in, as is mentioned in Brahma Vaivarta Purana, a golden age within the Kali Yuga. And it's up to us or whoever wants to take it up to bring that in. But it means an understanding of the principles of Krishna consciousness as they work in human society, which means an understanding of the Vedic culture, Vedic society that Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce. Now here's a controversial statement, you can all think about it. Should we follow exactly as Srila Prabhupada followed, what he taught us in all respects?
Absolutely.
I would say no. I would say that Prabhupada, he made, maybe a qualified yes is a better way to say it, that Srila Prabhupada made many adjustments to modern life, but he wanted his disciples to learn the Vedic usages. So the more we can go back to the traditional culture, the more that will be advantageous for our advancement in Krishna consciousness. So not to dilute these standards that Prabhupada gave, but to understand the principles behind them and introduce them as far as possible. Of course, Srila Prabhupada saw our inability to do so, and therefore he sometimes warned us against trying to be, against Niyam Agraha, about trying to introduce rules and regulations without ourselves understanding the principles behind them. So, I'm zigzagging a bit here. Actually, it's, should we follow the principles that Srila Prabhupada, the principles, The details may vary, as is stated in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The principles should be followed, the basic principles should be understood and followed, but different spiritual masters may give different details of how to follow that. However, we should know what the principles are and not just say that, well, anything goes. The modern world is very shallow. People have no ultimate goal of life. They talk about love and peace and compassion and empathy and all these things, but it's all based on the platform of how we can enjoy ourselves in this world without any understanding of the actual goal of life. So it's very shallow, even though they use words like love and peace, it's all platitudes. They have no actual love. Just like this Dalai Lama, he's known to be the great apostle of peace, talks about peace and love. He eats meat every single day. What a hypocrite. He's a big meat, he eats a lot also. So, but people think, oh, how wonderful. Or Mother Teresa, she, millions of people living on the street in Calcutta, she ministered to a few of them. There's so many welfare organizations attempting to ministrate to the poor people. Still there are so many of them. Somehow or other, she got a reputation as a great saint. Although she also ate meat every day. And had no inclination to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though she was living in the land of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Her aim was to convert people with faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to meat-eating Christians. But people think, oh, what a great saint. She looked after the poor people. The people who are dying on the street, after living on the street all their life, she'd take them in her home to die. It didn't help them much. And then if they got better, they'd put them back on the street again. So, as I said, some of the things I say in this session may not be very popular. But just see how shallow society is. Srila Prabhupada came, and what he gave is actually beneficial for all of human society. But you find people like Dalai Lama, so much lauded, and Prabhupada, people don't even know about it. People cannot judge who's an actual saint. There are so many bogus gurus come out of India, and they become so famous because exactly for the reason that they talk the kind of platitudes that people like to hear, but they don't teach surrender to Krishna, which is what actually everybody needs, but nobody wants. So they think someone who comes and smiles and holds a flower and talks about peace and says everyone is very nice, very, very good. It doesn't threaten them in any way. So it's easy to live like this. It's easy to be saintly just by looking saintly. It's people like that kind of saint. But the kind of saint who teaches us what we need to hear may not be appreciated. So it's difficult to be a revolutionary. It's difficult to be a devotee, to stick to the principles and say that Sarvadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja. Modern society is hellish, eating meat, gambling, intoxication, all these things are sinful. Of course, it's not that we all, just like we were at the outside the stadium, the football game, we didn't catch people yesterday and run up to them and shake them and tell them, stop eating meat and drinking. We were performing Harinam Sankirtan, which they benefited from by hearing, and most people appreciated, which is for their great benefit. But if that's all our movement does, and we don't introduce this message, then we're not delivering the full, we're not delivering the full message that Srila Prabhupada gave us, and that people need to hear. People need to know these things. And even among our own community, like in Alachua. I guess it's a difficult situation because you have all kinds of devotees here, but some who are more serious, and maybe many who are not that very serious. At least most of them are not seen at the temple much. And it would seem that if they were serious, they should come and participate in Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu in association of devotees. These are the basic activities which nourish our Krishna consciousness. And if we don't participate in them, then obviously we're not going to make the same advancement as those who do. And if we don't participate in them, then it's likely we're going to participate in something else because we have to do something. So if we just think, well, I'm a devotee, I got initiated, and Krishna's very kind, and at the end of life someone will do some kirtan for me, and I'll go back to Godhead. We may be lucky, someone will perform kirtan, but a real devotee, they want to serve Krishna now also, and not just wait for it. And there's no guarantee that someone, or that we'll even have the inclination to be in the association of devotees at all. So, Krishna consciousness is very blissful, but the bliss comes from practicing it. It's not just that by designating oneself as a devotee that one gets the benefit of performing devotional service. So, yeah, there's no doubt that it is more difficult to preach in the modern world, in the West, in America, than it is, for instance, in India. And devotees have devised various plans, such as teaching yoga and cooking classes and all these things, which can be successful in bringing people into Krishna consciousness, but the point is we have to bring them into Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we can, just like now, there are many Mayavadis who like to do what they call kirtan. It's not actually kirtan, because kirtan means to glorify Krishna. And the most famous of the so-called kirtaniyas, the so-called Krishnadas, openly says that he doesn't believe in any person, Krishna, anyway. So that's not kirtan. That's simply offensive. So we can mix with such people, but if we just mix with them and don't at any point try to bring them beyond the platform that they're at, that we just mix with them to do what they call kirtan, then we're not really helping them. We are in that case associating with them. Association means to be with others and not to give them Krishna consciousness. Either we're taking from them or they're taking from us. So simply being friends with people and being nice to people without making any endeavor to bring them to the actual point, then we are liable to be influenced by others. And we see that some devotees, they seem to be more influenced by, for instance, Vastu or astrology or something. They see people in terms of you're a Capricorn or you're a Sagittarius, even devotees, and think that this is their identity. And instead of seeing through the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, the reason there are so many problems is because the window is on the wrong side of the building. So spend $10,000 to take it from this side to that side. But the reason for all problems is lack of Krishna consciousness. You spend $10,000 to have a festival, call all the devotees, and that will be much more auspicious than moving the window from one side to the other. So by incorporating these mundane outlooks into Krishna consciousness, or becoming too much enamored by them, we ourselves run the risk of losing the great jewel that Srila Prabhupada gave us, which is the understanding that Krishna is all in all. Outside of Krishna consciousness, there is nothing of any value. There may be, as long as we're in this world, there's need for education, medicine, various material considerations. But ultimately, there's nothing beyond Krishna. Another outlook, I spoke about that a little before, that some devotees have adopted, is that of the academic outlook, in which we examine everything in a doubtful way and we try to amass information about it. And in this way, we take our own intelligence and our own method of study is more important than that of Shastra. This is very dangerous. So those who have been fortunate enough to come to Krishna consciousness, we pray that at the end of life we won't sing Hari Hari Bifale Janama Goainu Manusha Janama Paya Radha Krishna Nabhajir Janiya Shunya Bisha Kaina. That having, oh my Lord Hari, I've spent my life useless, even though I got this human form of life, I didn't worship Radha Krishna, and then knowingly, willingly, I have drunk poison. So it's better that we conduct our lives in such a way that at the end of life, we don't feel regret that I wasted my life. We may think it's very difficult to practice Krishna consciousness. It is difficult in some ways. There's some austerity is there. But by sticking to that, some austerity means some rising in the morning, and chanting 16 rounds may seem like an austerity. We have to fit it into our schedule. Or schedule. What is it in America?
Schedule.
Okay. And but if we're not prepared to take this little trouble, of course, I guess I'm preaching to the choir. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here if you didn't accept all this. But then we set ourselves up for so much suffering life after life. We shouldn't think that Just because I'm initiated, then Krishna is obliged to deliver me. That in itself is an offensive attitude, to say that, well, I chant Hare Krishna and do whatever I like, and Krishna has to look after me. That's the Sahajya mentality. Take it easy. Bhakti is a natural feeling, so it's just what you feel. Go with the flow. Srila Prabhupada talked about the hippie seeds resprouting. I sometimes call this popcorn spiritualism. It's just, you get some popcorn, it doesn't really nourish you, it just gives a little cheap taste sensation. So like that, we may have a cheap approach to Krishna consciousness. It doesn't really nourish us, but it feels good. That's all. Okay, here's a quote from Percy, and I don't know how to pronounce his middle name, Shelley, who lived for 30 years at the turn of the 18th century. He lived from 1792 to 1822. He is like the archetypal hippie. Here is a quote from one of his poems. Obedience. It's about obedience. So he says, obedience, bane. Bane means that which obstructs or destroys. So obedience, bane of all genius, virtue, freedom, truth, makes slaves of men and of the human frame a mechanized automaton. So he believed in non-obedience. Right? That's what I say, the original hippie. He had to obey the laws of nature. He went out on a yacht when a storm was brewing up. His friends told him not to, but he did anyway, and he succumbed to the laws of nature and drowned. He died young, at the age of 30. So, this attitude, that's what I say, is the archetype of an original hippie. This attitude is quite opposite to that of Shastra. Ya Shastra Viti Mutraja Vartate Kama Karataha Nasa Siddhivavavnoti Nasukam Naparam Gatim. Those who don't follow the injunctions of Shastra and act according to their own whims, who are not obedient, they cannot attain happiness or perfection or the ultimate destination. So, this traditionalism, which I'm talking about, has strong roots in Guru, Sadhu, and particularly Shastra. Guru means who teaches Shastra. Sadhu means who acts according to Shastra. So it's a very strong and fixed root. It doesn't change. Whereas the broader approach is more interpretive. Interpret according to our own understanding. And thus, it doesn't have any fixed root. If we take Shastra and then try to interpret it, or we don't follow Shastra, then we have no fixed root, and it just tends to degrade into, just like Shelley here was talking about virtue and truth, but he thought that virtue and truth was according to his own definition. So the virtue and truth, according to our own definition, it will definitely degrade because the conditioned soul is bewildered by Maya illusion and takes virtue and truth to be that which is conducive to sense gratification. So that we have people who think that it's virtuous, for instance, to eat meat. On certain festival days, you should eat meat. It's a religious practice. Once I came out of our restaurant, which is right next to our temple in central London, and there was a Christian handing out leaflets outside. So I took one of the leaflets, and it was funny. On it, there was a picture of a Satan with horns and fangs and looking really dangerous and holding a plate of carrots and cabbages and potatoes. And vegetarianism is from the devil. So they interpreted in the Bible, it stated that man, God gave man dominion over the animals. And they said, great, let's eat them. Prabhupada pointed out the defect in that. That, well, if someone gives you their child expert babysitting service, you'll never have to worry about your children ever again. We'll look after them very nicely. Grotesque babysitting service. So, we don't have McDonald's yet in any ISKCON center. But we do have this idea that, well, do something different. You see, we have these like summer camps, and often instead of having just straightforward programs, there's always something different. Hypnotic regression, laughter therapy, just do something different. What's wrong with Bhagavad Gita as it is? Rising early, and many of these camps, they don't even, the program starts now at 7 o'clock in the morning. So, what happened to rising early in the morning? Which Prabhupada said that one who cannot rise early is not serious about spiritual life. So, there's so many things. Anyway, I think I have to cut through, and I think I got the general gist of it. Yeah, I can give a few more examples. This idea of egalitarianism, all are equal, it's PC, politically correct. At ground zero, where the World Trade Center used to stand, a statue has been erected of three firemen. One black, or whatever they're called now, from time to time, Afro-American, I think it's called. One white, and one Hispanic, because they have to show all the, I guess they didn't put any Chinese, but these are the three major races, they didn't show any Indians. But the fact is, there were only white and Hispanic firemen. There weren't any black firemen, but to be PC, I mean, who died in the, what do they call it? 9/11. But to show that we have to be equal to all, they had to put a statue of a black fireman also. I saw a documentary film of scientists talking about the different theories of the origins of the universe. So most of the scientists were white men, but they also had a token woman and black scientists, because, you know, we have to show we're all equal. This idea that we have to be all equal. Srila Prabhupada, yeah, so feminism. Srila Prabhupada was very much... Srila Prabhupada wasn't very diplomatic in his approach to this. He incited controversy, both in Chicago and I think from Philadelphia, then he went to Chicago, and an all-woman team of journalists, TV journalists, came to interview Srila Prabhupada. And eventually the interviewer asked Srila Prabhupada, so according to you, all the problems in society are caused because women are not submissive to men. And Prabhupada said, yes. And at that point, she left in disgust. So I'm not going to discuss this in great detail, because I have done so already in a seminar which I gave, which is available on the internet. Can you give the link if anyone wants to get that? It's called Women, Masters or Mothers. And if you want to listen to that, you can. It has been available on the internet for some time. It's In the first week it had 600 downloads and I was expecting some protests, but I didn't get any protests because I guess it's because it's presented systematically. And the gist is that men and women, they're different bodies, and there's a certain function and psychology which goes with the female body, which is different to that of the male. And the basic physical need, even of women, is and very strong emotional need is to have children. And with children comes motherhood, looking after them, the need to be protected. And women, their basic desire, as far as the woman's body goes, you're not talking about the spirit soul here, is to have a secure home and children. And if we go against that, as modern society is very different, of course, modern society is very different, some adjustments may be made to that, but it's unnatural to be in any other way, which produces many problems. People feel discontent, both men and women. The natural order, as Prabhupada used to speak about artificial equality, the natural order is disturbed, and there's an attempt to make artificial equality, which it doesn't work. Men are not as good as women in some things, and women are not as good as men in some things. Men are never going to be as good as women in giving birth to children. That's for sure. That's an example that Srila Prabhupada used to give. And women, what do you think? In the army, they're not going to be, in general, I mean, there may be one or two, but in general, they're not going to be up to the standard that they can be on the front lines. And anyway, why should anyone want to send their mother or their sister or their daughter or their wife to fight in a battle? And what if they get captured? I mean, it's horrible, isn't it? What the men on the other side are likely to do to them. So this idea that men and women should be equal in all respects, Srila Prabhupada was very much against it. And it is a concept which has come up in our modern, extremely unnatural society. The whole way of life is extremely unnatural. The nuclear family of husband, wife, and one or two children. And nowadays, it's not usually or quite often no husband, because as Prabhupada said, if the milk's available in the marketplace, why bother to keep a cow? In other words, if women are so easily available, sexual partners, then why go to the trouble of getting married and looking after a wife? Then you can just have one after the other without any responsibility. And the women are left looking after the children. And so the children grow up without a proper family. This is the... and people think that's normal. So the natural order is that men are men, women are women, they have different roles to play. Men are masculine, women are feminine in their behavior. The normal role is that society is male dominated. Srila Prabhupada upheld that. He saw that as a major anomaly of modern society. He didn't attempt to change it overnight, but within ISKCON also. I mean, he made men sannyasis, not women sannyasis. He said that women can't be sannyasis. He made male GPCs. I think in one case where one temple in 1968, the temple consisted of a husband and wife, and the husband ran away. And then the Prabhupada said to the wife, that, okay, you'll be the temple president. But he didn't make women temple presidents. He said they could be, but they have to remain under the protection and guidance of their husband. But he didn't actually do that. I'm not saying this, I'm not undermining the great service which has been done by so many, and is being done by so many devotees in female bodies, as we often say, or even that they can't do that, or they're not capable of doing it. But I propose that we seriously consider Srila Prabhupada's desires that we move toward Varnashram society, and that women act in their natural role as mothers and grandmothers, and even if they don't have biological children who are devotees, they can, in the broader village, people grow up with many mothers. Just like when I was in Bangladesh, the women would ask me, how could you leave your mother? How could you go so many thousands of miles away from your mother? But I would tell them that coming here, I got so many mothers. Because that is the normal situation in a village, especially in a Bengali village, that you have your own family, but the kids, they run in and out of different homes, and if they happen to be around when the meal's going on, they get fed also, and you, they grow up with many mothers and fathers, and even if the, someone else's kid is around and they do something wrong, someone else from the same village can clap the kid's ear, and that's not considered wrong. Even now, recently I got a letter from Sri Lanka, one devotee's preaching there, and he wrote me a letter. He said the teachers are so much respected, and you, there are shops where you, where they sell these thin canes, which are meant for the teachers to whack the kids. And the parents support that. They said, if my kid is behaving wrongly, whack them. They want that, because they have trust that the, and the teachers are so much loved by the children, because they, the children feel that they have the best, the teachers have their best interest at heart. I guess nowadays you can't do that, and Prabhupada specifically said not to do that. I never, in Bengal especially, I never saw kids getting whacked. I guess nowadays you can't do it because people, they don't have the culture of actually caring for children. They're more likely to abuse children, abuse children than act in their best interest. And if you give them a stick, they may just go wild with it and let out all their mental aberrations. And so we have to be careful in implementing this. But my point is that we should move toward implementing that. And because the society around us is so different, we shouldn't just accept the modern society as it is and go along with its standards, because its standards are repeated, are in every generation producing people who are more like cats and dogs than even in the time when Srila Prabhupada said there were cats and dogs. So we should move toward that society which is conducive for Krishna consciousness. It's not that simply by doing this, anyone will become Krishna conscious. But the norms of Varnashram society are conducive for making or producing people of character and of disposition which is more likely for more conducive for them to take to Krishna consciousness. I'll take comments and afterward, because I know you wrote a book on from the very beginning. I saw that book, yeah. So you may have something to say. Yeah. So Srila Prabhupada said some things which may be very difficult for even our devotees to accept nowadays. I'm going to read some of them now. And some of these statements, they've just been relegated to the books. We don't discuss them anymore because maybe we're afraid that if we say this, people will be upset, or we don't believe it ourselves. We're afraid that people will become angry. Maybe some of you will become angry. So, It's a challenge. It may be a challenge for us to accept these things. But it should be understood that Srila Prabhupada is not, his statements are not motivated by any, what some people consider to be an antiquated outlook on life, or discrimination against others, definitely discrimination, but not discrimination against others. Discrimination has to be there. This word discrimination, or you're discriminating. Discrimination should be there. But not discrimination against others means it's motivated, it's ill-motivated. But to say, for instance, that women should not be independent, as Srila Prabhupada did, which is a very heavy statement for people in the modern age to accept. But then Srila Prabhupada also says that women should be protected. So women in the modern age, they have their independence, but they don't have any protection. So you have to choose. You can't have both. In Vedic culture, they don't have the choice. They're protected, because that's for the benefit of everyone. If women are not protected, then we have modern society. And then the family breaks down. And Varana Sankara, it's Arjuna's fear in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna expressed his fear that the Varana Sankara, or persons who are a Sanskrita, they are unpurified, unreformed. Such people will become dominant in human society. So we should understand that Srila Prabhupada's statements, they're not motivated by envy, but by knowledge of the subtle workings of the universe. Srila Prabhupada understood human psychology in a manner which no modern psychologist can understand, because they don't even understand the existence of the soul. So we should not simply blindly accept such statements, but intelligently try to understand them and not blindly reject them also. A few of the statements I'm going to read out now will be called, and in modern context they'll be called sexist. Sexist means when you discriminate. Usually it means men discriminating against women in a manner which is considered not favorable for the women. Okay, here's Srila Prabhupada speaking about the education of the daughters of our devotees. Srila Prabhupada said, we shall teach the girls two things. One thing is how to become chaste and faithful to their husband, and how to cook nicely. These are the two things. If these two qualifications they have, I will take guarantee to get them a good husband. These two qualifications are required. She must learn how to prepare first-class foodstuff, and she must learn how to become chaste and faithful to her husband. Only these two qualifications required. Then her life is successful. So try to do that. Ordinary education is sufficient. A, B, C, D. Srila Prabhupada wanted his the daughters of his disciples to learn to read so they could read his books, which he can, for boys also, he considered that to be the ultimate education. That was supposed to be the basis of the syllabus. Just that boys learned at school and girls to learn at home. This is all nonsense. So big, sound education and later on to become a prostitute. What is this education? To make them a prostitute, it doesn't require education. Apart from Krishna consciousness, materially they should learn, there are many stories. Nala Damayanti, then Parvati, Sita, five chaste women in the history. So this is in traditional Indian culture. Girls are taught the stories from Mahabharata and Ramayana of Nala Damayanti, then Savitri, Satyavan, Sitaram, like this. And Arundhati with Vashishta. And the other fifth one is the Ravana's Mandodari. She's considered very chaste. So these are the five chaste women in history. They should read their life. And by the 15th, 16th year, they should be married. So train them in that way. Very chaste, faithful wife, and knows how to cook very nicely. other qualification, even they haven't, that's all right. Okay, this is from Srila Prabhupada's, what I just read is from a morning walk. Now from the fourth canto, Srila Prabhupada in the purport writes, women in general, that means not all women, but women in general, so not necessarily all women, women who come to Krishna consciousness are understood to be highly elevated. Women in general are very much sexually inclined. Indeed, it is said that a woman's sex desire is 9 times stronger than a man's. It is therefore a man's duty to keep a woman under his control by satisfying her, giving her ornaments, nice food and clothes, and engaging her in religious activities. Of course, a woman should have a few children and in this way not be disturbing to the man. Unfortunately, if the man becomes attracted to the woman simply for sex enjoyment, then family life becomes abominable. So it's a very different outlook on family life and male-female relationships. The man is required to be in family life on a high platform. He's not attracted to the wife simply for sex enjoyment. He's discharging his duty as in family life, but his focus is on ultimate spiritual realization. Then, from the ninth canto, Manu had begun that sacrifice for the sake of getting a son, but because the priest was diverted by the request of Manu's wife, a daughter named Ila was born. Upon seeing the daughter, Manu was not very satisfied. Again in the ninth canto, upon seeing Sudyumna's deplorable condition, he had been transformed into a woman. Vasishtha was very much aggrieved, desiring for Sudyumna to regain his maleness, Vasishtha again began to worship Lord Shankara. If we see the Sanskrit, we can see the adjective deplorable is Srila Prabhupada's insertion. It just says his condition, the Sanskrit says. Srila Prabhupada writes, this is from the first canto. The women class are by nature less intelligent. The Shudras and the women class do not have to go any samskar save and accept the ceremony of marriage. The less intelligent classes of men, namely women, Shudras, and unqualified sons of the higher castes, are devoid of the necessary qualifications to understand the purpose of the transcendental Vedas. Now you may think, why am I reading all this out altogether, all at once? This is not a campaign against women, but I'm just pointing out that Srila Prabhupada consistently gave this message, or gave this teaching. It's not really a message, it's not Prabhupada's, we don't take this as opinion, and that it has been more or less relegated within our society to being in the books only. So, difficult as it may be to accept, it is better to set up our society in a way that, and again, it may be very difficult in the modern age. Even the laws may not allow that, but our aim should be to set up a society which is conducive for everyone according to their psychophysical condition to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. And there are different roles to be played by men and by women and by brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras. Not everyone is in the same category. Srila Prabhupada wanted, we should also understand that Srila Prabhupada had a purpose in repeatedly making such statements in his books. As is well known, Srila Prabhupada was very kind in his dealings with his female disciples. Elsewhere he wrote that women, they're more inclined to religious ceremonies. When there's a gathering in religious ceremonies, generally the women always outnumber the men. We also see that Krishna was especially kind to women, beginning with Putala, Kubja, the wives of the yagyic brahmanas, and especially the gopis. So it's not a matter, discrimination against anyone on the basis of the body is completely antithetical to Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada did make such statements repeatedly in his books for a purpose. The purpose is that as long as we are in this material world, there are significant differences between the roles of men and women, and if we don't understand this, then that contributes to society being a mess. Srila Prabhupada wrote in a letter to one of his disciples, "I know that your wife and Vishalini both gave birth to baby girls. That is the defect. I want male children, but you have no stamina for it. I expected from Vishalini by her belly that it would be a boy. Anyway, never mind. The name Brijlata is nice. Why do the majority of my married disciples give birth to girls?" So, in one purport, Prabhupada writes that the understanding of a woman is always less than that of a man, and this was in relationship to Parvati, none less than Parvati, Durga. So, apart from this, I'm supposed to leave some time for comments. I'm sure I'm going to get some comments. In our movement, I'm not sure so much here, but in India, our movement has become very big in poor feeding and feeding children going to school, and then it's advertised how we're helping building up the nation by giving food to people in school, and our devotees, many of our devotees are engaged in collecting money to feed poor children in the school. And eye camps, hospital, and then people, and we see even in America, devotees are asked to donate money for running schools which teach the government curriculum. Srila Prabhupada in one letter wrote that we are not, regarding schools, that we are not going to teach the government curriculum, but with the exception of one school, Bhakti Vidya Puri Maharaj's school in Mayapur, as far as I know, all the schools in this school teach the government curriculum. So that's a big difference from what Srila Prabhupada wanted. So, then what happens then, if we do this kind of what Srila Prabhupada referred to as mundane welfare work, and people like us, they give us money, and it's easier for us. For years, people would say, "Well, why don't you feed the poor? Why don't you open schools?" And now they don't say that to us anymore. We're doing what they want us to do, but it's not what Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do. He wanted us to distribute prasadam widely, that's true, but he said we shouldn't be specifically known as poor feeding. And what happens with this midday meals is that often it's cooked by people who are in many cases just not even chanting 16 round, not attending any programs. It appears in some cases not even offered. And they just take it out, and there's no program in the school for engaging the children in chanting Hare Krishna or any such thing. It's just delivered and dropped off, and they go like this. It's become popular in ISKCON because it seems to be, one reason is they make a lot of money out of it. So there may be exceptions. I'm not saying that there may not be exceptions, but when the exception becomes the rule, then Srila Prabhupada's vision becomes becomes relegated. We lose Srila Prabhupada's vision. We may say, well, we have to have schools, we can't educate, we can't raise our children the way Prabhupada said, because the law doesn't allow it. That's true, maybe, but then how to keep Srila Prabhupada's vision prominent and not just merge into the broader society as it is. Some people say that times have changed, so we should change. That's also true. That's why I was saying, I made that shocking statement. that we may not necessarily do exactly as Srila Prabhupada said in every circumstance. Times have changed, but the world hasn't changed that much radically since 1977. And Srila Prabhupada is, after all, the founder Acharya of ISKCON, and that by emphasizing his position as the founder Acharya, we can understand that he meant to give the guidelines which are meant to be the guidelines for ISKCON and for all future Acharyas. And although there may be some exceptions, and as times change, we will have to change to some extent, just like Srila Prabhupada preached according to time, place, and circumstances. And time, place, and circumstances do change. But the same point, we have to see what is Srila Prabhupada's vision and try to implement that. We may think, well, what about our own individual thinking and expression? And that's all right. But first we should see what Prabhupada has given us, what is Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, and stick to that. Otherwise, this individualism, if it's not, if our individualism becomes more important than our following, Acharya Upasana, worshipping the Acharyas, worshipping is principally by following them, not by offering samarati, then individualism becomes an expression of false ego. So, alright. That's it. I'm more or less finished now. This is, as I said, a traditionalist position. I'm not saying there's one position, or that there's a particular correct line. There may be, it's natural that different followers of Srila Prabhupada will follow him in at least somewhat different ways. Just like we see some of the most famous devotees in ISKCON, they're quite different in their approach, just like, well, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnu Jan Maharaj teamed up, but they're very different in their approach. And I think Vishnu Jan Maharaj eventually couldn't take it or whatever. I don't know how to explain it. He felt uncomfortable with that. But both were very elevated and servants of Srila Prabhupada who were very successful in spreading his mission, even though they both have different approaches. So, I'm not saying there is a correct line, but that, as I perceive it, our movement has moved dangerously closer to the secular than Srila Prabhupada gave us, and the vision and standards that Srila Prabhupada gave us have to a large extent become compromised. Srila Prabhupada was a spiritual master. Often we use the term spiritual guide. Srila Prabhupada used the word spiritual master. He didn't use the word spiritual guide. Guide means, yeah, okay, do like this, and then the person thinks, well, maybe. The spiritual master means should be followed. The founder Acharya of ISKCON, not just an Acharya. That Sampradaya son, they keep on insisting that he's the Sampradaya Acharya. But Prabhupada didn't call himself that. That's a misunderstanding. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is our Sampradaya Acharya. Srila Prabhupada is within the Chaitanya Sampradaya. He's the founder Acharya of ISKCON. As such, his statements were meant as the foundation of ISKCON. And having said that, I'll open it up to discussion. I don't think we have another mic, so please speak loudly.
Your divine grace, Bhakti Vikas Swami Maharaj.
Well, we all have Prabhupada's divine grace if we follow him.
My name is Advaita Acharya Das.
Could you speak a little loudly?
Most of you know me, Maharaj. For the first time, for the last 3 days, I have associated with Vani, with Maharaj. My name is Advaita Acharya Das. I am most unfortunate and fallen person. only thing I would say is that with 70 years of age, I try to gauge, and Maharaj, in your praise, I must say that you have, to me, explained deeper understanding of Vedic principles, much deeper. Second, Maharaj, reading your book, fortitude that you have displayed.
Which book, sir?
Bhakti Siddhanta Lab, which I am just glued, is the dedication that you that the background, the effort, the time that has gone into look into the intricacies of that period, which is so very important for us, that's gone far away. You have, and the book and your Vani, I find an erudite scholar. And also, Maharaj, most important, I share with all of you that we need more people like Maharaj to bring the pendulum which has swayed too far on one side, must come in the center where it started. 1972, in Cleveland, Ohio, on Euclid Street, I walked into ISKCON storefront center, and on the wall, four principles were written. Number one, preaching is the essence. Number two, purity is the force. Number three, books are the basis. And number four, utility is the principle. So when I say I want to follow Prabhupada at verbatim, no, I just want to follow Prabhupada in relation to what I found, four lines that obviously came from Founder Acharya, and also I want to follow Prabhupada with the understanding that I gained from his disciples and their disciples. So Maharaj, thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Yeah. Please, what's your name? I probably everyone here knows you, but I don't. What your name is?
Radha Govinda Swami.
Radha Govinda Swami. Hare Krishna.
The purport is 324:40, where Srila Prabhupada said, when you shouldn't take sannyasin, you should be protected. So I never considered a deviant. But I always.
Are you living here in Latvia?
Right now I'm here, I don't know where I am. I don't know if I'm staying. But I wanted to bring up this point because I myself as an individual, as my spiritual master's daughter, Srila Prabhupada, who saved me, he saved all of us. Not only from the capital to the birth and death, but he's actually given us a chance to actually take part in loving pastimes of Shushin rather than Krishna, become a servant of the servants of our servants. How can we not accept that Srila Prabhupada has given us? I can't speak about others, but I know for myself, in coming to Srila Prabhupada's Lord's feet, when I joined the temple, I actually gave up my fiance to become a devotee. And I was one of those Matakis. He was very submissive, very meek, followed everything properly, even accepted Tatanya from Kamshishi and Shimana. I think maybe Dharma and Kudu can even substantiate that under a certain regime. There was preaching that linear for beating, and I don't want to use publicly the word that was used, but basically that women are used for sex. And often enough, I myself would be beaten, but I would accept it as my karma and never do anything about it.
Were physically beaten? Often?
Yes. By an educated temple president and some brahmacharis who even under my spiritual master's authorization, I was in life shape at I think, not I think, in order for women to live the role of Vedic women, which is really our propensity as women, like you were speaking about the psychological differences between the male and female body, those differences are definitely there. Although in Kali Yuga, because of the sinful activity, some of the demarcations have sort of become merged. But in order for women to be able to live according to the principles of the Vedas, which is part of our body to live like that, the men also have to live according to the Vedic principles of being men and honoring women. I don't mean giving honor, but in terms of the Vedic perspective of men relating to women as mother. Because we can use the word mother, but how can you go being a mother? In Srimad Bhagavatam, there are five categories of entities who are to be protected. Those are the children, the women, the cows, the Brahmins, and the old men. But within ISKCON as a whole, these things have not been properly implemented.
That's true.
Although Srila Prabhupada certainly taught all this. Srila Prabhupada gave us the guides.
Yeah,
the problem is that we as individuals weren't following properly, and I'm not saying this is criticism to deride anybody, but often enough in the ashrams, especially Brahmachari and Sannyasa ashram, there was wrong preaching. There were men who were actually attracted to women.
No, all men are attracted to women, with very few exceptions.
But in order to try to keep the externals, certain things were preached, especially...
Yeah, well, my point is, excuse me cutting you out here, but my point is that I think we all know that the years after Prabhupada's departure, there were many, and in Prabhupada's presence, there were many things done which shouldn't have been done. And my point is that our response should not be to throw out Prabhupada's vision, but to actually live according to that vision in all respects. Because actually, historically, if we see in the Western world, even there were kings who were loved by their citizens, and this is, but because they misused their position, they were thrown out, and gradually the society has evolved or devolved or whatever you want to call it towards democracy and equal rights because of misuse of power and exploitation. But our society should not respond in the same way, because we have the solution. To the problem is the Ishvaro Ham Aham Bhogi, the mood, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So definitely it's a very good point that these social systems and these attitudes, they have to be implemented with the proper understanding. Otherwise it becomes a means for exploitation, which is why people are afraid of, I discussed that, of absolutism and fundamentalism, because it's misused. So the proper implementation is required. But the non-implementation or the improper implementation, neither will serve Srila Prabhupada's purpose.
But the thing is, the most important is discussion of what Srila Prabhupada was teaching.
Well,
but
yeah.
But the difficulty is in terms of ISKCON as an organization, and maybe this may sound controversial, and I could be completely wrong, but I'm speaking out of my understanding of what I'm perceiving as truth, is that we have a general management body, the GBC. And I think that because things are allowed by them, which are contrary to Srila Prabhupada's instructions, I believe that there are various problems that there are, which are existing today. But devotees, quite a number of them, including senior devotees, are in an atmosphere of fear to be able to express themselves, even to the point of presenting Srila Prabhupada's letters to the GBC.
to discuss certain things.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to ask you straight up. For instance, I'm in a woman's body, but why was it that I am a woman's body and I accepted the instruction? Because I was always taught to follow my instructions going from the line down. I mean, why was I sent to some very, very dangerous countries alone?
I can't answer that because I'm not at all involved in that.
Right.
Exactly
but
why
as
that
a
was
woman,
done. But obviously, you see, we're talking about general principles here.
Right.
And the fact that we're talking about them means there are social problems.
Right.
And in this broad body, it's not going to be very effective to start discussing individuals' experiences, but taken as a whole, there's psychological analysis and there's sociological analysis. Psychological is for the individual. That's done in a particular way and in a particular forum. Here we're discussing more social issues, which means as a body. When the social body is disordered, then everyone within it suffers in various individual ways. That's understood. That's why we're discussing the social issues.
But isn't the GBC
GBC is responsible? We're all, as disciples of Srila Prabhupada, we're all responsible. What can we do? I'm doing this. Yes.
I think it's good that, you know, you're very faithful to Prabhupada's teachings. And basically, you know, I try to live like you do. You know, I preach and go on. But at the same time, you know, I think that there's a lot of gray areas in which we have to be very discriminatory in the right sense to evaluate the situation and, you know, to see things more with a broader spectrum. For instance, if you tell everybody, you know, Demetrius is demoniac, okay? But they'll point out, well, what about Saddam Hussein? You know, is it better to have free speech than to have, if you say anything, you have
wet stool or dry stool?
No, I think, you know, democracy is better than having a dictator.
Yeah, Srila Prabhupada thought that America was better than Uganda.
So there's a lot of gray areas, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we may not be able to...
Do you know that Uganda, when I'm saying Uganda?
Idi Amin.
He ate his political opponents.
He killed his son, too, and cut out his heart and ate it.
Yeah, so Prabhupada didn't approve of Idi Amin, but he did appreciate that America had given him the facility to spread Christian consciousness.
It's like women, too. Okay, you know, we know what Prabhupada said about women. Many times.
Well, I don't think, excuse me, Prabhu. I feel that in the modern people joining ISKCON at the present day may not hear many of Prabhupada's instructions.
Right.
And they may, people joining ISKCON today think that in certain areas they'll think that our movement's main activity is feeding people in schools.
Well, I'm talking to you from my own perspective.
Yeah.
Not about what
I'm saying that it's changed and people they think that we're a welfare organization.
I agree.
That's why it's necessary. I said I'm preaching to the choir here.
Yeah.
But we need to preach to the
I may not have heard all that, but what I was trying to say was that Prabhupada adjusted things, okay? In my perspective, and maybe I'm totally wrong and totally offensive, you know, I believe 100% in Prabhupada as my guru, and I try to follow and have faith in the Holy Name and the scriptures and everything else. But Srila Prabhupada changed things, okay? He was very innocent. He could not have possibly known that children were being abused in the guru. He didn't know that. He couldn't have imagined that because he was very, he was just too innocent, okay? So he may have said things which we may have to adjust a tiny bit. Just like, you know, we had some male temple presidents here, okay? So he would say, you know, that if a country has a queen, no king, they're very unfortunate. So he could say, you have a so you might conclude, well, if you have a female president in the temple, you might be unfortunate. But the fact of the matter is that the female president has done a lot better than the four male presidents before her. So what are you supposed to do? You know, Prabhupada says women are less intelligent. But I say that...
That also has to be understood contextually also. Because obviously every woman is not less intelligent than every man.
Some of the things he said, just like he adjusted the fact that people shouldn't take sannyas, okay? He changed that. He adjusted, he said, I don't want any more, I'm not going to perform any more marriages. He adjusted that. So he adjusted certain things.
Yeah.
Him, I wouldn't, I'm not saying he would have adjusted it that women can take sannyas. I think that's very bold. You know, we have, if somebody gave a woman sannyas, what would you expect? But I'm just saying, Prabhupada changed his perspective. And, you know, I think maybe in the long term, when we've introduced the Vedic culture, you know, 200, 300 years down the road, we're all living in the villages, self-sufficient, everything else, great. But in the meantime, maybe we have to adjust things a little bit, you know, bearing in mind everything that Prabhupada said, but at the same time being practical. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think I covered that within my seminar, that obviously we have to adjust, but we shouldn't lose Prabhupada's vision, that's my point. We shouldn't lose that vision, and we shouldn't take the adjustment to be the norm that we, and we should know that it's an adjustment. But if we take the adjustment to be the standard that's to be followed forever, then it's going to be a problem, and it will produce problems of its own also. For a woman to be a town president in a situation like this is maybe better in the sense that this is more like a community rather than traditional temple, just like Draupadi managed the household of the Pandavas of Yudhishthira. She managed it like a whole big institution. She managed the whole thing. So it's not that women can't be managers, but Prabhupada said women could be town president, but they should be under the protection of their husband.
What if they don't have one?
If they don't have one, yeah, well. Anyway, we have to see the situation and, like you say, adjust to it. But my point is, we shouldn't adjust so much that we forget the goal, and that the goal actually becomes forgotten, and then people say, well, Prabhupada is a 19th century Bengali, blah, 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 and you didn't know. But the adjustment will of it, and even the best, you see, Varnashram Dharma, that itself, we can't say it's perfect in as much as it's an arrangement for imperfection. It's an arrangement for the material world. So, and how Varnashram is followed, that's also been different in the course of history. But having said that, there's no doubt that Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce that, and it is Krishna's system. Mm. Yeah, I saw Ranjit Prabhu's hand before.
I'd like to thank you very much for coming and giving this presentation, and also your book, Srimati Siddhanta by Baba, has a depth that is quite incredible. And my reading of it, it, for me, emphasizes how much Srila Prabhupada followed in the footsteps
of
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, philosophically, managerially, how he organized his son, with the addition, of course, of actually instituting a governing body commission, which was what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta wanted. Mm. And so I'd like to thank you very much for that contribution to Vaishnava history and tradition. And now I come to my question.
There was a great mercy on me that I was, I had the opportunity to perform that service. As I wrote at the beginning, I don't know who I am to be writing about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Someone had to do it.
How long did it take?
Between the beginning of the research and the publication of the book was 24 years.
Oh.
But I wasn't, it wasn't that I was full-time engaged in it for 24 years. I had no idea, if I had known that it was going to be such a big thing, I might not have undertaken it in the first place. In the beginning, I just thought that Prabhupada's godbrothers are all passing away, so why don't I just try and interview them before they go? And that's how it began. And then it gradually grew and grew, and it would probably still be growing if I just didn't stop and publish it. In fact, there is a lot more material that's come. We're still with Ranjit Prabhu's question.
Your title of your, actually I have a few questions, but the main one is that...
Shall we keep it to the subject of this seminar?
Yes, that's right. You may have dealt with it, because I wasn't here absolutely all the time.
Yeah.
And that is that your title is the traditionalist view.
A traditionalist view.
And however, we know that following hewing closely to Srila Prabhupada's teaching and general Siddhanta, Prabhupada often mentioned or often espoused the idea that the blind man and the lame man, that the West is blind, but India is lame. And the two should be somehow joined together so that the blind man can carry the lame man. And so I was curious that in a traditionalist view, how you would reconcile those.
Well, the blind man and the lame man, the vision comes from the blind man. Sorry, from the lame man.
Right.
The vision comes from... We shouldn't put it back to front. If the vision comes from the blind man, from American culture, and organizationally we're as messed up as India. I often joke about that, that ISKCON spreading Indian culture all over the world. It's like managerial incompetence and so on. So it should be, yes, the vision comes from the Vedic culture, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very traditional in many ways, but he introduced, which was considered anathema by many orthodox followers of Vedic culture, the printing press, using the English language. I mean, even cooking to make, even using sugar produced from overseas was considered, using cloth from overseas, anything overseas, the language, even associating with Western people in any way was considered wrong by orthodox followers of Vedic culture after that time. I mean, there was a time when even to write or speak in any language other than Sanskrit was considered adharma. Even to speak in Bengali, to discuss religious or philosophical topics in Bengali or Hindi was considered a gross violation. What to speak of English. So, yeah, it should, it's a good point. The technology of the West and the knowledge of Shastra should be combined. It takes an expert to do that. Yeah, I'll take it in order that I see hands raised or fingers raised.
Often when there was innovation, Prabhupada wanted to know what is the result. Is it successful? So we can see also all these innovations, not just how related to the vision or not related to the vision, but if it's successful preaching. Because in some cases, devotees have made some adjustments and they became successful in preaching.
Yeah, good point.
In other cases, they were following the vision and they were not successful in preaching.
Yeah. Yeah, so that comes back to the point that we shouldn't blindly accept and we shouldn't blindly reject. But we may say that... someone is successful in preaching, but what is the nature of that success? We have to see also. Just like when Prabhupada was present, there was one guru from Hawaii. He had, taking the knowledge in Prabhupada's books, he had made his own system of Krishna consciousness. And he had many disciples, and eventually he came and offered himself and his disciples in Prabhupada's mission, but he retained, at the same time, he retained his separate identity and separate organization, unofficially. And his followers had a different approach. They didn't believe in dressing in kami clothes. They didn't like the aggressive style of Prabhupada's followers in preaching, especially in book distribution. They'd go on Harinam with guitars and different things. And they did have many followers. But they did not grow their hair long. Prabhupada objected. Sorry, they would grow their... The men would have outgrown hairs. Prabhupada objected to them. He said, if you keep long hairs, you're not my disciple. So even though it appeared that the result was that they were more easily acceptable by the general public and people joined them more, but their standards were not very high, and Srila Prabhupada seemed to like accommodate them rather than wholeheartedly accept them. They didn't wholeheartedly accept Prabhupada. So we may say that, for instance, if we open hospitals and schools that teach the government syllabus, people will like us and more people will become devotees and this and that. But quantity is not necessarily the sign of success in preaching. Numbers is not necessary. And public acceptance is also not necessarily the sign of success. In fact, Prabhupada in one purport wrote that the very fact that Chankazi was opposed to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the sign that it's to the point. And the fact that we have opposition is the sign that our movement is strictly following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So what exactly is success in preaching? It seems to me that nowadays we often think that, well, that if we get some good publicity or people like us, and that's our success, beginning, middle, and end. But the real success, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, is if we can make one pure devotee. So quantity and quality, that's also being discussed within this seminar.
But isn't there a saying from Bhaktivinoda Thakur that judge Vaishnava based on how many Vaishnavas in it?
Not that I know.
Yeah,
there is. Well, Prabhupada, of course, he's like a touchstone. I couldn't find that quote, actually.
Also,
how many Vaishnavas he makes, but again, you have to see the quality.
Like
the upper Sampradayas, they have so many followers. There are thousands and thousands of people who call themselves Vaishnavas in Bengal, but who don't follow principles. So is that a success?
But we get into some subjective aspect of the preaching that's difficult to ascertain. But Prabhupada was also questioning people how many books he did distribute, how many devotees he did make.
Yeah.
He was interested in quantity.
He was.
And
this has been discussed, quality and quantity.
And one example, for instance...
There is that one quote also that Prabhupada said about having an ideal institution, not for everybody, only for the most intelligent class of men. So exactly to ascertain what is success has to be.
See, if the movement is going to be in every town and village, we cannot expect that everybody is going to be a pure devotee, but they will be introduced to Krishna consciousness. And the aspect of the hospital, like the Bhaktivedanta hospital, I know from the records, I was there, they are making one new devotee every day. So, as Prabhupada said...
Okay, but if the devotee thinks that the main purpose of ISKCON is to run hospitals and schools, then...
Yeah, but who is saying that?
I know devotees, initiated devotees, who, from what I understand, think that the main purpose of ISKCON and their service is to perform medical activities.
I understand, but it doesn't mean we're going to close the hospital. Then we need to adjust the consciousness of this devotee. Preaching is going on.
Preaching is going on. Whether it's ISKCON's business to do this or not, that is discussable. But, yeah, okay, please. Yes?
I was not on these topics. But
not on these topics?
Well, it's on what you spoke about. I was just wondering if at some point, if we do have smaller village life, a lot of these issues will be changed because...
Automatically.
Because just like divorce or abuse of children or...
What was that word you said? Divorce?
Divorce.
I think I'm losing my hearing due to amplification. In India especially, everything's full blast all the time. Yes.
If you're in a small village and you've lived there from birth, and then you take up the role of teacher, it's going to be very difficult for you to abuse the children
of
your, because you're depending on them when you're older and that they become successful. And everyone's more looking out for one another rather than, hear you do something wrong, okay, I can move to another country, I can go off somewhere, nobody will know me there, I can start again. You know, nobody cares.
Yeah, and many of these problems are just because of the largely unnatural society we live in which people they're completely stressed and they don't like what they're doing. There's no stable family, there's no stable home. People move around and around, they have no stable relationships. It's not very likely that this society, the way society is going on all over the world, will last for very long. Can't last very long. And automatically things will fall into place, we hope, if people aren't totally messed up by that time. When society is forced to move back to a more traditional style. But Prabhupada, he wanted to have that in place before that all broke down. But we can take many of Prabhupada's ideas, others have taken that up. Other groups have taken that up and used that, which we haven't. Which is just like the diorama exhibition, we probably had great vision for that, and the Swami Narayan group have done that. And they asked Bhaktisiddhanta, our artist, how to do it all, and that's been very successful. So,
not many successful farm communities.
No. It seems to be very difficult to establish that. But the beginning is to convince people of the need of it. And unless we talk about it, the beginning is talking, which is what Prabhupada did in the beginning. And then the next thing to actually get there and live on the land and do it. Okay, yeah.
We know, like you were talking about Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, how he had no interest at all. Then we also have the...
No interest
in he only accepted one disciple. He had no interest in the externalities of the material world at all in his behavior.
Same
thing with your book on...
Bhakti Das Babaji.
Right, yeah. But we also have the wonderful example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Prabhupada. Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually worked for the British, and he was a magistrate. I mean, we have to try to understand, here's a pure devotee of the Lord who is dedicating a large percentage of his time. Of course, it showed, we've been told that he would, because he was such such a pure devotee, that he was able, materially speaking, to appear extremely advanced, that the other judges, the British judges, were actually envious of him because his ability to make decisions on court cases so quickly. And Srila Prabhupada spent many years as a chemist.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I appreciate, devotees who want to go down the path of like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, or devotees that want to do or people that want to go back to an agrarian lifestyle, that they've adopted that part of Srila Prabhupada's teaching.
Mm.
But Srila Prabhupada also said that he wanted that the judges should be wearing tilak. Now, how's that going to be possible if a person doesn't go to the university, get a law degree, and execute? And try
interesting
to,
question.
Because myself, I don't go out in public here in town as a Hare Krishna because it would negatively affect my business.
Mm-hmm.
However, I was just down in Miami and I saw that, the Hasidic Jews, they go out because they're accepted and their culture has been developed for 5,000 years where they have the ability to work amongst themselves for financial betterment. But we don't have that system yet. We don't have that system. But we can still go out there. I mean, obviously many of the bankers, I don't put it in their face, but many of them know that I'm a Hare Krishna. But I don't advertise it to them, because if I do, that's it. They're, that just the nature. I mean, why is it that agrarian life is not working in America? It's because the whole system is against that. The whole system that they set up. So, yes, devotees have struggled very hard, but you go down to the land use and the planning department, to them that concept of going back to agrarian lifestyle is so foreign that all the rules and regulations are actually against it.
Yeah. So, certainly Prabhupada, he said that one can live in the city and be Krishna conscious. He did say that. At the same time, he stressed that the general focus of his movement, he planned that, would be toward people living on the land, living a simple life, living a lifestyle which is more conducive for Krishna consciousness. He didn't say that one cannot live in the city. He said one can also live in the city and be Krishna conscious, but he pushed this agrarian lifestyle also. So it's not that one cannot live in the city and be Krishna conscious, but in general it is going to be more difficult. The demands of working life in the modern context, generally people have to work long hours and associate with people who are not sympathetic to Krishna consciousness. So some people may be strong enough to do that and make an impact. But in general, Prabhupada wanted to establish communities that people can see that there is an alternative. As I said, many people are looking for an alternative. And if we can provide that with genuine spiritual life, many people may take that. Prabhupada said millions will join our farms. So yeah, it is a challenge for us. We've blown it to a large extent. We have messed up to a large extent, but the challenge is there for us to take it up. And although some devotees may live in the city, it's definitely a large part of Srila Prabhupada's mandate to establish Krishna-conscious communities with our own culture that people can live in according to our own standards. Yeah. Anyone else who hasn't spoken?
I wanted to know, we do have one school on this property called Bhaktivedanta Academy, mm-hmm. and it's not all mandated by the government.
Oh.
So we do have that school.
Okay, good. They allow that, huh? In many governments, they don't allow that. I was told in Germany, if you don't, like in many states in America, homeschooling is allowed. I think it's most states, isn't it? But I was told in Germany, if you don't send your kids to school, they'll just come and take your kids right away from you and put them in a government home. They insist that they must be taught the way we want to teach them.
I wanted to say also, I remember reading your book about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I was very astonished to find that even, you know, hardly more than 70 years ago, a lot of times, when the sannyasi, he would speak, the ladies would be behind a screen.
Oh, that was normal, yeah.
The ladies would not be visible.
Right.
They'd be behind a screen where they could hear, but not...
They'd be heard. They'd be hearing, but not seen. That was normal. It was quite a different society. But that was considered more conducive for spiritual advancement. There are many rules, like just like... even now, it's changing a lot in India, but most... Well, outside the major cities. Men and women, even husband and wife, won't walk with hand in hand. Definitely not. No kissing in public and all this kind of thing. Even Chitraketu laughed at Lord Shiva for having his wife on his lap in public. Even now, I don't think I ever saw that in India. Even now. That certain things, that the intimate functions are kept for private, not for public. So it's a very different culture. Yes, please.
Yes. First, I want to thank you so much, Maharaj, for giving your classes and for your desire to espouse the traditional view, the traditionalist view. That's very much important and should be done. And your books as well. I'm just starting your so I enjoy it very much. I want to know what you feel about the difference, because I see so clearly, let's see if I can get my points across, between absolute knowledge and relative knowledge, because there's such a big difference. We understand that what Srila Prabhupada said, absolutely, we accept 100%. The relative knowledge, there's shades of gray there. That being said, I want to say that in a desire to establish a traditional view, I think it's so important to establish the fact, especially in this Kali Yuga, that men have to be trained up to behave properly toward women, because that has gone downhill so quickly. And that being said, I want to say that when statements are made, relative statements like women are 9 times more lusty than men, in my humble experience in this body, in Kali Yuga, that hasn't been my experience.
Yeah.
So those are kind of inflammatory statements, and other things have to be adjusted first, like men behaving properly. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, anyone?
Just the last point.
Well, there's someone else who hasn't spoken yet.
For you.
Yeah. Please.
I just wanted to say I really appreciate your boldness in trying to keep Prabhupada's principles. But one thing that I find a little bit controversial, especially as a new devotee, so I really don't have much of a say in anything. I wasn't at all offended by your statements about women, but I am a little bit offended about your statements about what appears to be common welfare work. Because specifically in India, some of the like the hospital, the Bhaktivinoda hospital that they have there, is focused surrounding Krishna, and it isn't just a focus on preserving the body. And you see, as the Prabhu mentioned earlier, that there is such a nice result in both the quantity and the quality of the devotees that are coming through these programs. And in the Varshana Eye Camp, it is specifically geared towards serving the Brijvasis. And there is a large emphasis on kirtan going on. And the leader of these welfare activities, or seeming the welfare activities, puts a large emphasis on kirtan and prasadam distribution, not just food distribution, but on prasadam distribution. Because he recognizes that it could be seen as welfare work to many people, but that it's not meant as welfare work, but it's really meant as just to distribute the holy names and to distribute prasadam. And that in so many ways, Prabhupada wants us to preach in a way that, you know, your average person will be able to be receptive to it. Many people think that welfare work is a good thing, so we preach through the welfare work, but it's not just seen as merely welfare work. And you see that in Chalpati, where all of these things are coming from, all these so-called welfare work is coming
from. Oh, no, it's not only from there, although they're maybe taking the lead.
But in Chalpati, you see that the quality of the devotees there and the quantity of devotees that are coming to that temple through those programs, through other various preaching programs, it's proof that those seeming welfare works are working very nicely to create many, many devotees. So,
all right, I'll respond to that. There are other centers in India are wanting to open hospitals now. It's schools, hospitals, midday meals, it's becoming in the eyes of several leaders the thing that we do, that when we establish a center we have to establish a hospital, a school, and all this kind of thing. So my point again, that it's tipping the balance, that we can do these things, but or theoretically we can do these things, but when Srila Prabhupada, that's right in the science of self-realization, when he was requested that the people of Andhra Pradesh, they're suffering from drought, they're starving, it's a pitiful situation. Prabhupada had Tamal Krishna reply that, no, we're not going to, it's not our job to do that. What was the other thing you said, the eye camp? Yeah, I was visiting one place and someone came up to me and he was a doctor and he said, first, I never met him in my life before, and he said that now we're doing eye camps. First thing he said to me, now we're doing eye camps every month. So he, as I could see, he saw his devotional service in terms of eye camps. So, and I said to him, yeah, all the bridge bassies are all going to be watching TV now. So unless you give them proper education, then it will be, and you see the advertisements that they advertise that we're helping poor children. It's presented to the public that we're helping people. It's presented in a mundane way, and then devotees who join, they also preach in that way. They imbibe that spirit. They preach to the public like this. They think it's a part of the Krishna conscious movement, prime activity is to do this. So it may have its place, but I'm saying it's already out of balance in many devotees' minds. And they join and they think that this is a prime activity. Whereas Srila Prabhupada always emphasized our prime activity is to give spiritual knowledge. It's much easier to give bodily help than spiritual help. And even people may become devotees, but if they think that the bodily help is of any intrinsic value in and of itself, then there's a mundane tinge there. That's my fear. Years ago, shortly after Prabhupada left, it was advertised, or one leader of our movement gave the example of the Salvation Army, that they started off as a group who would go out in the streets and proselytize and sing songs about God, and people didn't like them and they were thought to be stupid. And then they started doing welfare work and then people accepted them. And now they're well established in society. But people know the Salvation Army nowadays, and they in terms of what bodily welfare work. I met a Salvation Army worker once in an airport, and I spoke to him. It's all about how we're doing these schools and hospitals and feeding people and this and that. So the danger is that we start to do these things to get public acceptance, and then we start to define ourselves in terms of that. That is my fear. Yeah, I'm just to limit the time, as we're already on the time, I'm just going to take whoever wants to speak once only. All right.
Well, back in Sri Lanka, that's what he said, that if it was up to him, he would take the marble off the temple.
He said it's better to take the marble off the temple and print books, although he didn't actually do it. But
This program in Shaobhati is so wonderful. I'm wondering if we were to use that Lakshmi to print books, we might
have many books. Yeah, so huge amounts of money and takes, and devotees have to keep on contributing to that.
Yes. How many wealthy disciples of Ravana and Maharaj?
Anyway, I don't, as I said at the beginning of this seminar, I don't want to make it like a personal thing or pinpoint, but I want to talk about principles. The hospital, the Bhaktivedanta Hospital is the best known, so I guess that seemed a little personal. Yeah, please. I'll take him as I saw his hands being up.
This is in line with the gist of the... This is in line with the gist of this seminar. It just came to my mind, and I thought I'll quote something. It's from Theodore Roosevelt, EDR, in his famous speech on a citizen of the state, in which he...
What is it?
A citizen of the state.
A citizen of the state.
in which he generally talks about what is his vision of a country and how an ideal country should be like. And it's a very nice philosophical article, but in that there's one particular few sentences which I feel they kind of jive into what you, the basic crux of the seminar. One thing he mentioned is that a society or a state should not be so idealistic and should not emphasize so much on trying to achieve those standards and not ready to make few adjustments. That's not going to last. I'm just paraphrasing it. And on the other hand, he's making this point. Similarly, if the society only makes an excuse saying that these are very high ideals and then it's impracticable to achieve them, and if it loses its vision, that society is sure to be doomed. So
there's an interesting article came in the Gorya magazine of the Gorya Math in the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He didn't write it. Most of those articles would have been based on things he said, even if he didn't personally write it. So he gave the example of people who say that, not knowing how to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that people will imitate Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstasy, fall on the ground, crying, and they say, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did that. And then they'll be eating fish, as Bengali Sahajiyas are inclined to do. And if you say to them, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't do that, they say, well, he's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's so great. We can't follow that. It requires spiritual vision to know what to follow exactly. Yes, please. I'm just going to take everyone who wants to speak once on.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. I just wanted to say that I think that Srila Prabhupada says, build the temple in Mayapur and the whole world will come. You know, like the temple of the Vedic planetarium. And I think that in order to build a society, like Prabhupada says, we want to give example to the whole world how we can live in a central society in God. At the same time,
a
central society in God, a God-centered society.
God-centered society. Yes,
that shows an example to the whole world. But a God-centered society, also what Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, that we should take care of the body of the devotees. Like, for example, in Ishkon, like my wife, you know, she passed away 4 years ago. And we see that there are many proper disciples right now that, okay, yes, book distribution is very important, preaching is very important, but the basics of life, like in this community, you know, we have proper disciples living. They have to go to Tampa to die, you know, somewhere in a hospice house, because we don't even have in this community a little place that probably they can leave the body in the association of the body. So I just want to say that it has to be also some balance.
Yeah, within society, social care, medical care, all things have to be there. In the modern medical system is horrendously expensive. In traditional societies, old people were cared for at home, and they would generally die at home also, and they wouldn't. Generally, they wouldn't go for like complex medication when they're already old. They're just, you know, accept it and fade away and let the inner body die. Just take it like that. So that's all part of the Varnashram society. Looking, health care for old people is just automatically there. It's something that's not even thought about. It's not even thought about means that. Not that it's neglected, but it's just automatically there. They have, and people would have larger families, so they'd have plenty of children. But nowadays, to help look after everyone else. But nowadays, having children is a liability because it's so expensive, and you're so busy, and the whole society is a disaster. The whole way the society is set up. It just works for those few individuals who can get their act together. But even then, they may be rich one day and poor the next, the way the society goes. So overall, we do need to set up an alternative. I mean, you can operate within the present society, but on the whole, this society is dysfunctional in so many ways. So it's a great challenge, isn't it? It's a great challenge for every one of us individually to be Krishna conscious. And it's an even greater challenge to bring us all together and do what is required to act as an ideal society and even understand what is required for that. And these are definitely issues which have to be thought out, and maybe different people will address them in different ways. There is no doubt, as a society, we are failing our members in so many ways. How we can improve that, we have to see also. Just like, for instance, there's no justice system. Theoretically there is, but there is no justice system in this. So it's very difficult to think how to put one together. Because justice, to have a proper justice system, you have to be able to give some punishment. But then, within the law, how can we punish? These are problems which we have to consider. And I don't think we can just blame ISKCON as a society because there's no system for healthcare. Maybe devotees who are working full-time devotees, they should have medical insurance. And that's pretty standard, isn't it, nowadays? No? You don't have medical insurance, even now?
No, they don't.
Even if you do have medical insurance, the companies don't help you in so many cases. They find a loophole. So, sorry about that. So it's really difficult. The whole society is so demoniac, actually. It just works against the interest of the individual. It's a very difficult age. In this age, somehow we have to, if we have faith in Prabhupada's vision, we have to actualize that. Prabhupada, in several places, he spoke a lot about Varnashram. Sometimes he said it is not possible to fully institute it. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't, to some extent. To what extent, we shall have to see. In at least one place, he wrote that Varnashram can be brought in by the chanting of the holy names. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiran Yata. Yes, please. I just want to ask this, Mataji. Please, excuse me. I'll keep it one, apart from myself, I'll keep it to one comment per person. Thank you for tolerating me.
And yesterday, I think it was you told the pastime of one devotee or disciple who approached Srila Prabhupada, and he had been to two different temples and many devotees, but they weren't practicing strictly. And then there was the other where there were a few devotees, but they were very strict. And Srila Prabhupada said we needed both things. And my question is then how does that work practically, and how if there's the smaller group who is practicing strictly, which I would not consider myself part, how do they give their association to the other group without becoming?
Incidentally, those two groups, they have a traditional rivalry. They don't like each other at all, and it goes on up to the present day. So, how to, there are so many how-to questions. It depends on spiritual purity. Srila Prabhupada wrote once that I'm paraphrasing here, the movement will be as good as its leaders. And that book, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, was an anthology by Shubhananda, who has long since merged into the mundane academia. Larry Shin finished his analysis. He was talking about the 11 acharyas at the time. That's how old it was. And he said that, it depends if they're actually pure devotees. So it depends a lot on the leaders. But having said that, who is a leader in Prabhupada's last days in our presence, when he was asked who is a leader, Prabhupada said, all of my disciples, if they follow. So it's really up to us, everyone. And it's up to everyone. You can't really blame others. And it's up to every one of us to take Krishna consciousness and spread it to others. Did you speak yet?
Okay. I was listening to a morning walk where Prabhupada says this guy goes to, this student goes to the exam and comes. His father asked him, so what did you do in the exam? He said, the difficult questions I couldn't answer because it is very difficult, I didn't study. But the easy questions, what is that to answer? Anyway, I know it.
Really? Prabhupada said this? I don't remember this.
Yeah, in one of the morning walks.
Really? You read them?
No, it's, I heard.
Yeah, so well, I didn't hear. It sounds like an interesting anecdote, but I did read all the conversations. I don't remember hearing that one. We often hear, you know, Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that. Yeah. Anyway, it is an interesting anecdote.
So if it is too
difficult, ones are too difficult, and the easy are too easy. So I didn't do anything. You have to do something.
So if it is too idealistic, it's very difficult to follow. Or if it is too watered down, what is the need?
It's meaningless.
Follow?
Yeah. So yeah, that's, I've already covered this point, that there's the ideal and there's the practical. And my point is that we've gone too far as a society towards accommodating. That's my point of the seminar. I'm not saying that we shouldn't accommodate, but we should keep Srila Prabhupada's idealistic vision in mind and know what it is and try to work toward that. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Anyone else who didn't speak?
Yeah, this one.
Yes, please.
We should, I'm thinking, we should really read Srila Prabhupada's books and letters and just know what he wants.
We should read Prabhupada's books and letters and know what he wants. That's true.
Right.
On the other hand, not on the other hand, but in addition to that, we can also say that for vision and understanding, most people are going to take guidance from others. It's Protestantism in Christianity to say there's the book and me, the Bible and me and Jesus, and that's all there is. There's no religious guidance. And there's Rigvedicism in ISKCON, which says there's Prabhupada and his books and me, and there's no need of any spiritual guidance. So, how to understand Prabhupada's books and the whole gamut of knowledge in relation to the previous tradition, in relation to the previous acharyas, how to apply that in the modern world. It makes sense that especially those who are coming new take guidance from those who have been practicing and following and considering these matters for many years. Rather than, okay, you're just right in the beginning, you're supposed to know what to do just by reading Prabhupada's books by yourself. So we should read Prabhupada's books and understand what he says, but we all have to take guidance. And different guides may have different perspectives. And what's the right line? I guess we'll all find out whether we go back to Godhead or not.
May I quote the letter?
No, sorry. Excuse me. Because I'm going to... I made a rule here in my absolutist way. Dictatorial way. Only one comment per person. Please don't leave in disgust without taking some prasad.
Yes.
Because Madhuri